Duly Noted, a health and care podcast, is the official podcast series of Duly Health and Care. Each podcast features physicians or team members discussing groundbreaking topics and innovations that help listeners reimagine and better understand an extraordinary health and care experience.
We are joined today by Dr. Abdullah Rahman Dia, a board-certified cardiologist with a focus on structural cardiology and complex artery diseases. Together, we'll explore the intricate balance between genetics and lifestyle in determining heart health. Doctor, welcome to the show. My first question for you today is, what are some parts of our heart health that we should be aware of?
Well, I think when it comes to the health of any organ, the factors that contribute are always going to be various and multiple. And I think it's always hard to distill which of the following, you know, factors contribute most to heart health. In America, obviously, the most important thing contributing to our heart health is our lifestyle and honestly, the American culture that we have. What we eat, what we do, our jobs, and then the genetic makeup and what we inherit from our family.
And how much of our heart health is then attributed to those genetics and family history?
I think, you know, specifically in cardiovascular disease, family history and genetics do play a big role. It's not the full role, but family history, especially in patients that have a early or premature family history of heart disease, whether that's the heart failing, like heart failure, coronary disease, valvular problems, rhythm problems, it's a big deal. And it's a big hurdle that can be difficult to overcome. But it's not the sole, you know, etiology or cause of heart disease, obviously, for our patients.
Are there any specific genes that influence our heart health?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's, in my mind, I kind of categorize them in different issues with the heart. So genes related to cholesterol and plaque buildup in the heart, genes related to high blood pressure specifically, which can contribute to heart problems. Genes that relate to hearts failing, like the mechanical pump of the heart, which is called like a cardiomyopathy or congestive heart failure, and genes that affect the electricity of the heart, arrhythmias, the electrical output and cadence of the heart. You know, when we talk about heart disease, a lot of times we're thinking about heart attacks, and we really do focus on specific genes that affect lipid metabolism and cholesterol. And so there are genes that have been identified, so the ApoB gene, the LDL gene, and these are genes that affect how cholesterol is produced and metabolized in the body. There are clear signals that there are patients out there that have large genetic predispositions to plaque increase and cholesterol increase. And those genes can be checked. There's also genes for high blood pressure that increase the likelihood of having high blood pressure, like the angiotensin gene. In the heart failure world, as I mentioned earlier, there's genes that predispose people to having heart failure, even if they haven't done anything to acquire that heart failure. And there's many cardiomyopathies that relate to that. And then there's sudden cardiac death genes. These are genes that, you know, when you hear about somebody playing basketball, a young kid, and they pass out and die, there are genes out there like the SCN5 gene that's known, for example, that is associated with sudden cardiac death and something called prolonged QTC, which affects the electrical activity of the heart. These are all identified and well known in the literature.
Well, when we're talking about genes and family history here, can those predict whether someone will develop a cardiovascular disease, or is it just one part of this big picture? How much influence does that have?
As I kind of alluded to earlier, it does have a big role to play. Like, for example, in genes that affect the electrical activity of the heart, those are pretty significant. I mean, if you have some of these genes, your risk for sudden cardiac death go up a lot. When it comes to cardiovascular disease in terms of coronary disease, it's one part of the picture. I'll tell you anecdotally, I've had patients where the family history is terrible and they seem to have inherited a gene for high cholesterol. But despite that, living meticulously and certain changes we can talk about in a bit here, they don't seem to have manifest cardiovascular disease. On the other hand, you know, I've had patients that have a genetic predisposition having heart failure in every person in their family or, you know, parent and that parent's parent has heart failure. And really, in that situation, the heart is programmed to fail at a certain age despite anything that they do. But lifestyle usually can either delay or hasten this predisposition, depending on what you do and how you live.
Mm-hmm. Well, that brings me to my next question. How much control do we have over our heart health through those lifestyle choices like diet, exercise, and of course, stress management?
I think it's huge, to be honest with you, especially in third world countries. I think part of Westernization has had some really bad effects, unfortunately. I truly believe the lifestyle that we've adopted in this country is really unnatural in some way. I know that sounds kind of tough, but we were not made to kind of be sedentary, eat processed food, and eat all day, you know? And people don't really want to hear that. But the reality is what we are eating and ingesting really have real ramifications to our heart. And I think what I would break it down into is inflammation. I think that we have done a poor job of addressing how inflammatory our foods are. Processed foods, carbohydrates, red meat, high fructose corn syrup, which I think is enemy number one. That inflammation will make your arteries got to go on fire and be more likely to have plaque rupture and have MI, right? And I think the idea that, you know, don't go too long without eating and breakfast is the most important of the meal, I don't know if that really pans out, to be honest with you. I think our bodies are not meant to handle food 24/7, right? Or large amounts of food right before bed. We're meant to be very active and go prolonged periods without food. So I think the eating habits that we've adopted, and sometimes I'm one of those people also, I admit that, are just not natural and bad for the heart, without a doubt. Sure, a good aspect of our culture is there seems to be a rising interest in exercise and fitness, working around the busy daily struggles that we have, right? And I think that really does, that cardiovascular endurance and fitness really does delay any type of potential cardiovascular disease. But if I were to summarize it to you, I really think inflammation is huge. It also turns out that stress is directly related to inflammation also, right? And so our daily lives, social media, the stress that's going around the world, news, all these things actually do contribute to our stress levels and can really increase risk of cardiovascular disease.
I'd love to just double down on that question. So if cardiovascular disease runs in my family, it's not preventable, can a lifestyle change like being less stressed and, you know, eating less fatty foods really help and make a difference?
Yeah, it can. And I have anecdotal evidence to support that. And I had a patient the other month who literally every male in her family had an MI in her 40s and 50s. Just extremely strong cardiovascular disease risk factors. She herself has been a avid runner, not like marathon runner, but avid runner, has adopted some of the kind of food habits I alluded to, less red meat, more, not like plant-only diet, but plant-predominant diet, you know, all-oil diet, intermittently fast. She's been pretty meticulous. I was really impressed with her. And she unfortunately had an abnormal stress test, so we had to do an angiogram, and her arteries were fine. Her coronary arteries were just fine. Now, you could say part of that is chance and just it is what it is, but I truly believe she mitigated some of that risk factor. So when I think it comes to coronary artery disease, I do think you can mitigate a lot of these risk factors. On the other hand, if you have a genetic disease that your cholesterol is super high, like everyone in your family, and your cholesterol is super high, I think then you're going to need medications to mitigate that. And the earlier that you do that, the better. I will say the ability to mitigate that is far less when you're 60 or 70. It's much better to enact these changes far earlier on, because by the time you're in your 40s, plaque has already developed in your arteries, right? And it's hard to undo that. So the earlier that you make these changes, the earlier that you address a familial hypercholesterolemia, the better off you are. Addressing it when you're 75 is kind of unrealistic, you know? They're kind of almost like the damage is done.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's say one of our listeners is hearing this and is ready to get serious about their heart health. You mentioned fixing your diet. You mentioned that physical activity. Are there any other habits that you'd recommend for patients who are just starting out and really kind of getting serious about this?
Well, I mean, in terms of physical activity, I do think there is some good data behind, you know, walking in steps, number one. There's some correlation between that. Two, I think we need to, and it's funny coming as a doctor, I think we need to address our work-life balance.
Yeah.
You know, I think that if you travel overseas, people think that our work-life balance culture in this country is not normal, right? And I think our listeners would agree for that. And I think this is something that truly has real ramifications. We are not meant to work, you know, many hours all day, every day, and stare at our computer and be connected to our phones all the time. It's just not natural, mm-hmm. right? I do think that's playing a big role in people's mental health too. Mental health has direct correlation with your cardiovascular health. Some people are not happy and they're depressed. And so that affects their food and their activity habits, right? I mean, it's going to lead to cardiovascular disease. I think having a good societal or social network, right? How many people after COVID, it became revealed that they're lonely and don't have support systems out there, right? And people did worse. And I can tell you anecdotally, people's health really tanked after COVID because of isolation. Obviously, some of that is due to poor access to healthcare professionals and preventative care, which we can talk about in a bit. But I think the social aspect of us being human is really important. If you look at less westernized countries that are more socially connected in a way, in a more natural way, people are happier and in some ways are less stressed out than we are.
A few more questions for you, doctor. For patients with that strong family history of heart disease, what preventative measures can they take early on, like you said, in life to minimize their risk?
Yeah, I see patients in clinic like that all the time. I saw someone like that today. You know, they come in, they see me, and they're like, hey, doc, listen, I have a family history of X, Y, and Z. What can I do? You know, for example, for patients with a premature family history of heart failure, the heart pump weakening early on in their life, we do a certain amount of testing to kind of evaluate their risk for that. EKG, which will look at the electrical activity of the heart. Sometimes we do an ultrasound of the heart to look at how the pump function is right now. And in certain cases, not always, we do actually do genetic screening for these inherited cardiomyopathies to screen for that. When it comes to cardiovascular disease, which is a little bit different, you know, the risk of having a heart attack or plaque issues in your arteries, it's more nuanced. I do recommend certain things. Number one is screening for diabetes and high cholesterol. Your care doctor can do, but you'll be surprised how many people have a strong family history of cardiovascular disease. They're doing great. They feel well, but they haven't been checked for diabetes in 5 years. And as we know, you can have diabetes and not know it with no symptoms. Same thing with high blood pressure, screening for high blood pressure and screening for high cholesterol. So those are easy tests right there to screen someone right off the bat. Two, there is a heart scan, which you may have heard of that many hospitals are advertising, which is like a $49 scan where it looks at calcium in the artery. It's a CAT scan. It's a 2-minute CAT scan. And it's not a perfect test. It's not a specific test. It's a bird's eye view test. And what it looks at is how much calcium is in your arteries, because calcium is analogous to plaque that's kind of been chronically there and calcified over. Almost, if there's smoke, then maybe there's fire underneath, right? So this is a score that you get that is averaged across the demographics of your age and gender to suggest how much plaque is in your arteries on average. It doesn't tell you if the plaque is obstructive or not, and it doesn't even tell you if the plaque is outside the artery or inside the artery, but it is a good screening tool for patients above the age of 40 who are concerned about coronary artery disease to just get a bird's eye view of their plaque burden, okay? Those two tests, along with a heart ultrasound, sometimes are a starting point to look into some of the risk factors for coronary artery disease. If somebody has symptoms like chest pain, shortness of breath, then we do more aggressive testing like stress testing or sometimes even coronary angiography, where I put a catheter in someone's heart and look at their heart arteries directly. Now, that's rare. That's not for everybody. That's not a screening tool. But what we do really does vary depending on the patient's complaints and their family history.
Great. And doctor, how can patients then assess their genetic risk for heart disease if they don't know it already?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tricky one, to be honest with you, because we do have genetic screening available to us. For example, we have associations or agreements with certain companies that allow us to screen for genetic testing, right? And this is kind of controversial in medicine. Should we just screen people for all these genetic problems that they could possibly have, right? Opens up a whole Pandora's box of problems, potentially. But we do have that ability to do that. And usually, if patients have a family history of sudden cardiac death or heart failure at a young age, those are the ones that I actually send for genetic screening, because it does have implications for certain therapies that we might give them and for their offspring, too. If they have a gene that is dominant and is going to be carried on to their children, you know, some people want to know that. That's controversial. But for other genes, like genes that contribute to cholesterol processing and deposition, that's a little bit more controversial, because we don't have direct management of how to mitigate that other than cholesterol medications. So some people say, why are you testing for the gene if the outcome is the same? You're going to just treat the cholesterol and tell them to do all these lifestyle changes. Also, cost, right? I mean, some of these gene screenings are covered, some of them are not. So that can be a big bill for the patient. So I'd summarize and say, you know, if you have a family history of heart failure, like cardiomyopathy or sudden cardiac death, you should see a cardiologist. You may get screened for a genetic abnormality. If it's more of the fact that your family has a lot of coronary artery disease and heart attack at younger age, gene testing is a little bit more controversial and less likely to change what we do.
Thank you, Dr. Dia, for sharing your expertise on the complex interplay between genetics and lifestyle and heart health. For more insightful health conversations, check out past episodes of Duly Noted, a health and care podcast. And if you have questions or want to learn more about improving your heart health, visit DooleyHealthAndCare.com. Join us next time for more discussions to help you reimagine your health and care experience.